किरीटजुष्टं अप्युतमाङ्गं नमामि मुकुन्दं शावकरो न कुरुते सपारयां हरेर्लसत्कं शनकं कनो भाय
The upper portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead, Hari, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated herein before, there are three kinds of devotees of the Lord. The first class devotee does not at all see anyone who is not in the service of the Lord. But the second class devotee makes distinctions between devotees and non-devotees. The second class devotees are therefore meant for preaching work. And as referred to in the above verse, they must loudly preach the glories of the Lord. The second class devotee accepts disciples from the section of third class devotees or non-devotees. Sometimes the first-class devotee also comes down to the category of the second-class devotee for preaching work. But the common man who is expected to become at least a third-class devotee is advised herein to visit the temple of the Lord and bow down before the deity, even though he may be a very rich man or even a king with a silk turban or crown. The Lord is the Lord of everyone, including the great kings and emperors. The men who are rich in the estimation of mundane people must therefore make it a point to visit the temple of Lord Krishna and regularly bow down before the deity. The Lord in the temple, in the worshipable form, is never to be considered to be made of stone or wood. For the Lord, in his archa in our incarnation, as the deity in the temple, shows immense favor to the fallen souls by his auspicious presence. By the hearing processes mentioned here and before, the realization of the presence of the Lord in the temple is made possible. As such, the first process in the routine work of devotional service, hearing, is the essential point. Hearing by all classes of devotees from the authentic sources, like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, is essential. The common man who is puffed up with his material position and does not bow down before the deity of the Lord in the temple, or who defies temple worship without any knowledge of the science, must know that his so-called turban or crown will only succeed in further drowning him in the ocean, in the water of the ocean of material existence. A drowning man with a heavy weight on his head is sure to go down more swiftly than those who have no heavy weight. A foolish, puffed-up man defies the science of God and says that God has no meaning for him. But when he is in the grip of God's law and is caught by some disease, like cerebral thrombosis, that godless man sinks into the ocean of nescience by the weight of his material acquisition. advancement of material science without God consciousness is a heavy load on the head of human society. And so one must take heed of this great warning. The common man, if he has no time to worship the Lord, may at least engage his hands for a few seconds in washing or sweeping the Lord's temple. Maharaj Pratap Rudra, the greatly powerful king of Orissa, was always very busy with very heavy state responsibilities. Yet he made it a point to sweep the temple of Lord Jagannath at Puri once a year during the festival of the Lord. The idea is that however important a man one may be, he must accept the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. This God consciousness will help a man even in his material prosperity. Maharaj Prataparudra's subordination before Lord Jagannath made him a powerful king, so much so that even the great Patan in his time could not enter into Orissa on account of the powerful Maharaj Prataparudra. And at last, Maharaj Prataparudra was graced by Lord Sri Chaitanya on the very grounds of his acceptance of subordination to the Lord of the universe. So even though a rich man's wife has glittering bangles made of gold in her hands, she must engage herself in rendering service to the Lord. Portion of the body, though crowned with a silk turban, is only a heavy burden if not bowed down before the personality of Godhead, who can award mukti, freedom. And the hands, though decorated with glittering bangles, are like those of a dead man if not engaged in the service of the personality of Godhead. Srila Shukadeva Goswami is speaking through transcendental realization. It is said by the great Vaishnava poet Vrindavan Das Thakur about Srila Haridas Thakur that some, they preach, but their behavior is not very good. And some, their behavior is very good, but they do not preach. But Thakur Haridas, he is the most benevolent, compassionate, and worshipable person, because not only does he have perfect achar or spiritual behavior, but he is also willing to extend himself, risk his life veritably, to preach the message of Godhead to others. Shukadev Goswami is speaking about detachment from material acquisition. And he himself, not only did he not wear crowns or jewelry, but he did not even wear even a thread of clothes upon his body. Regardless of the season, regardless of social perceptions, he was a person completely attached. He was a person with no false ego. He was completely transparent via medium to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He understood through realization Krishna. Krishna has all six opulences in full. Aishwaryasya, samagrasya, viryasya, yashashashriya, jnana vairagya yoschai vasanam bhaga itingana. All beauty, all knowledge, all strength, all wealth, all fame and all renunciation. Krishna is the source of all opulences, and ultimately he is the possessor of all opulences. No one else can claim proprietorship to any opulence except Krishna. Bhogaishvaya bhoktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. He is the proprietor of everything that exists. And whatever opulences any living being has, we should understand that it is Krishna's opulence, that by his blessings he has somehow given us some infinitesimal particle of his opulences for the purpose of using in his service. But if we do not use those in his service, then rather than becoming a source of liberation, they become a source of bondage. If we understand that everything belongs to Krishna, we want to utilize everything in a spirit of real humility for the pleasure of Krishna, because he is the supreme enjoyer. But the conditioned souls in this material world want to take the position of God. They want to claim to be proprietor. They want to claim to be enjoyer. And this is the source of all the problems within this entire creation. The problems within your own life and my own life is only that we still have this inclination to be the enjoyer, still have the tendency to claim proprietorship over the opulences which God has given us, whatever they may be, whether they be our wealth, whether they be our whatever skills or abilities we may have, whatever popularity we have. It is all meant for Krishna's pleasure. But when we want to enjoy it for ourselves and separate it from Krishna, then it becomes the cause of bondage and suffering. The beautiful affairs between Krishna and the gopis are the highest ecstatic love in the spiritual world. And when a man wants to claim proprietorship over a woman to enjoy her, or when a woman wants to claim proprietorship over a man and enjoy him, this becomes the deepest knot of material bondage in all material creation. Pungshastriya maithuni bhav metham tayoramito hridaya granti mahu. And whatever comes from such an attachment of bondage only further perpetuates the illusion that we think I am this body and everything in relationship to this body is mine. Bhagavatam says it is like a hard knot in the heart. So we must know that all women are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. All men are meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Everything in creation is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Krishna is the only Purusha. And everything that exists within this material existence is Prakriti. Purusha means the enjoyer, and Prakriti means that energy, which is the property of the Purusha, meant for the pleasure of the Purusha only. And all the problems within this entire society that we read about, and that there are so many legislative acts and so many committees and so many organizations and so many efforts to solve the problems of the world, it is all due to this illusion. People are not willing to accept their eternal constitutional position as Prakriti, the energy of the Lord. They want to compete. They want to claim to be Purusha. And even in our own little temple, whatever problems there are is only due to this principle. It is the only problem. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, There is only one problem, and that is a lack of Krishna consciousness. And there is only one solution, and that is to become Krishna conscious. And what is Krishna consciousness? It is the original, natural consciousness of every living being. Krishna consciousness means I am part and parcel of Krishna, I am his prakriti energy, and I am meant for his pleasure. And everything that exists is similarly meant for his pleasure. That is Krishna consciousness. So many anxieties, and so many frustrations, and so many disappointments, and so much repetition of birth and death for our unfortunate soul, simply because of this. We can trace all of our miseries to this point only, that we want to be Purusha. We are not willing to accept that we are meant for Krishna. And although Krishna consciousness is tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam, it is a great austerity. Sudhedyasyam brahmasokyam phanantam. It is the only way that we can actually find real happiness. And what is the austerity of Krishna consciousness? Ultimately, trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishna. Amanina manadena kirataniya sadahari. To be humble. And to be humble like a blade of grass doesn't mean to just lay on the ground like a piece of grass. It means to accept that Krishna is the enjoyer of everything and I am meant for his enjoyment. Ashlisya vapadatam panashtuma madarshana mana mahatam karotuva. And he can deal with me in any way he pleases. I am his servant, unconditionally. This is very difficult because our tendencies is our mind and our senses have so many impressions from so many previous lives which create such an atmosphere where we want to enjoy. We want to enjoy through our eyes seeing beautiful sights. We want to enjoy through our ears hearing beautiful sounds, through our nose by smelling various fragrances and aromas. We want to enjoy through our tongue by tasting palatable foods and by speaking all sound vibrations. We want to enjoy through the flesh all over our body some sensations. In this way, the mind wants to enjoy. It wants to enjoy profit, power, control, popularity, prestige, wants to enjoy the sweetness of people saying nice things about us. In this way, we are addicted like alcoholics or like drug addicts. We are addicted to this intoxicant of sense gratification, and it is very difficult to overcome it. And the Mayavadis, impersonal philosophers, they say that yes, this is correct. It is this ahankar, this ego, which wants to enjoy through the mind and the senses, which is the source of all misery and bondage. So just negate the mind, negate the senses, become zero. But this is very difficult. In fact, it is impossible, because the soul is ananda, satchit ananda. It is seeking pleasure, ananda mayo bhyashat. If it doesn't find it in its own spiritual position, then it must look for it through the mind and the senses of this gross material body. So the path of bhakti is the only true means by which we can overcome this disease of wanting to be Purusha. In fact, the impersonalist conception is so disheartening for a Vaishnava even to hear. Their idea is, yes, let us negate the tendencies of enjoyment for the mind and for the senses, and ultimately we become the Supreme Purusha. We become Brahman. We become God. Just tolerate for some time, and then you can enjoy the position of God forever. But this is simply impossible. The Mayavadi philosophers do not understand that there is a difference between the Lord and his multifarious energies. Aparayamitashtvanyam prakritim vinime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yagetam tarayate jagat. Krishna says that all the jivatmas struggling in this material existence, they are my internal separated energies. Bhumirapo vayu kamano buddharevacha ahankara ityame bhina prakritirashtita. Bhagavad Gita clearly explains the three primary energies of the Lord. There is Yoga Maya, there is Mahamaya, and there is Jiva Shakti. Maya Shakti, Chit Shakti. Actually, we can say Chit Shakti, which is the spiritual energy, Achit Shakti, which is the material energy, and Tatastha Shakti, which is the Jivatma. And Krishna explains this Achit Shakti is the eight elements of material creation: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and the ahankar, the ego. But Krishna says, besides these gross energies of mind, there is another energy. Aparayamitashvanyam prakritim virime. Jiva bhuta mahabaho. The jiva, the spirit soul, is also my energy. Never does he say it is me, it is my energy. And Krishna claims to be the source of all energies. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate. Mahatmanas tumam bharata daivim prakriti mashata. Bhajanti amanya manaso gyatva bhuta dimavyayam. The great souls, because they are of the marginal energy, they are transcendental and blissful because they take shelter of my chit shakti, of my superior energy. So in all cases, Bhagavad Gita and all the great shastras claim that the spirit soul is eternally subordinate to Krishna. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam aiko bahunam yo vidadati kama. We are always the servants of Krishna. And the servant is meant for the pleasure of the master. And that is real life. Any other conception is spiritual death. In the sense, death, there is no death, but there is forgetfulness. In the true sense of the word, forgetfulness is death. Because we lose that contact with our eternal blissful nature. Shukadeva Goswami is telling Maharaj Parikshit. And Maharaj Parikshit is listening with a true desire to hear the truth. Just a few days prior to this conversation, Maharaj Parikshit was wearing the crown and the silk turbans of the emperor of the entire planet Earth. And he had decorating his hands all the royal rings and bangles of the emperor, passed down through generations of the dynasties of these great rulers of the world. But he understood that self-realization, Krishna consciousness, is the only purpose of life. And he used the position of his crowns and his kingly royalty when it was useful in Krishna's service, but never for his own sense enjoyment, never for his own purposes. It is explained here that this material existence is like a vast ocean. It is an ocean of suffering. And it is an ocean of birth and death. And the purpose of living in this ocean is to get out of it. The purpose is not to remain suffering forever. And here it is explained that people are working so hard just to get material opulences. But if we are proud of those opulences, if we are trying to use them for our own personal selfish interests, they only cause us to sink faster in the ocean of birth and death. The example here is given of a crown or a silken turban, very, very heavy. The more heavy, the more costly. People want to put more and more and more ornaments on their crowns. And they're working so hard only for that purpose. And what is it doing? It is only defeating the very purpose of their life. So when Shukadeva Goswami is talking about crown, he is not only talking about a very rich man, but he's talking about anyone who has excellences, opulences. One who has much money. The more money you have, the more it will only cause the condemnation of your life if you do not utilize that money in the service of the Lord. Similarly, the more knowledge you have, it will only degrade you if you do not use that knowledge for the purpose of understanding the absolute truth and propagating that knowledge to others. That is the reality. In this beautiful purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that modern, sophisticated science, technology, is like a big crown on the head of society. And the more they acquire deeper, deeper, deeper opulences of such knowledge, the more the whole society sinks deeper and deeper into the ocean of material suffering. But if that same capacity for knowledge is used to understand Krishna, to serve Krishna, Mukunda, then it will liberate us. And then there is knowledge, strength, fame, renunciation, beauty. Beauty comes in many forms. A person may have a beautiful voice to sing. A person may be a beautiful artist to paint. A person may have the opulences of God to be very, very influential to others. There are so many attractive features that people are trying to acquire in this world. And we should know that if they are not used for the pleasure of Krishna, they are the greatest disqualification. The mother of the Pandavas, Prita, she prayed like this, Janmaishwaraya Shruti Shribir Edamana Madhapuman. That all of these material excellences are the greatest disqualifications for spiritual life. Because the more you have, the more you think, I am Purusha, I am controller, I am proprietor, I am enjoyer. And the more it degrades you, the more it separates you from God. And the only real happiness of the soul is to be reunited with God through humility and service. So devotees are never envious when they see someone having great material opulence. Why should we be envious? We know it belongs to Krishna. We know that this person, you come to this world naked without a thread of clothes on, without any property. That's how you come to this world, and you will leave this world in the same situation.
naked, without any property. You come with nothing, you go with nothing. So what is your property? For some time you may appear to be utilizing some of the facilities of this creation, but Krishna gives and Krishna takes it away. So why should a devotee be envious? A devotee is happy to see Krishna everywhere. He's happy to see Krishna in everything. And he's happy to see when somebody is understanding that and making advancement. And he's very, very sympathetic and sorrowful to see someone taking Krishna's property and misusing it. Materialistic people who may gain great power and strength, they may have bodies that can perform so many tremendous athletic feats. They may have wealth and accumulate more and more and more and more. They may have political power. They may have beautiful, beautiful artistic ways of going about things. They may be very famous and popular. And everyone in this world is envious of rivals in this regard. But a devotee understands it is all Krishna's. It is all temporarily being utilized by this person or that person, but it's going to be taken away from them any second. The only thing is, are they using it for the ultimate purpose of their life? If they are, we bow down to them. If they aren't, all we can do is feel great regret that they are so unfortunate. So unfortunate. We should never think, we should never see anything by material calculations. This whole material world is full of rivalry and competition. One woman is trying to be more beautiful than another woman. One man is trying to become stronger and more athletic than another man. Everyone is trying to attract more people than the other person. And in this way, there's endless competition. More money, more achievements. Who cares for your achievements in this world? After a few years, all that's left of your achievements is just temporary list in a piece of paper. They read it over your grave site or over the funeral pyre. This is the tradition of most nations. When a person dies, somebody reads out what this person achieved in life. As the flames are burning, or as they're throwing dirt over your corpse, somebody's saying, he conquered so many of his opponents. He did so many good things. He accumulated so many properties. And meanwhile, the soul is not even there to hear it. According to the Jewish tradition, the soul actually hears it. The soul listens to this last eulogy. And then after that, gone, finished. So that's all you get. 5 minutes of some statement that sums up your whole life. And when that 5 minutes is gone, then Yamaraj takes over from there. Yamadutas come, they will not be glorifying your achievements. They will simply be reminding you of all the various ungodly ways that you achieved your achievements. And then you will regret. You will regret for so many years, why did I do that? Why didn't I listen? Why am I so foolish? So devotees are not envious of such people who are wasting their lives. Prahlad was not envious of Hiranyakashipu, conqueror of the universe, so many opulences. He simply he condemned Hiranyakashipu. Nasaru manye suravarya dehinam. That you are wasting your life foolishly. Hitvatma patam grihamandakupam. You are in a deep dark well. He was the conqueror of the universe. He achieved everything he wanted to achieve. He had such a crown on his head, such a throne, such popularity, power, authority over others. And Prahlad said, "You are in a deep, dark well. You should give it all up. You should surrender to Krishna. That is life." So devotees always maintain this transcendental standard of perception. The only real wealth is Krishna consciousness. And everything else is simply like this burden on your head. The more you accumulate the things that men are aspiring for in this world, the more you have of it, the more it is like a burden. Burden just weighing you down in the ocean of material birth and death. Srila Prabhupada is using the example of Maharaj Prataparudra. He was a king. He had power, he had wealth, he had strength, he had so much popularity and fame. But he used all of it in the humble service of Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, wanted to, he sends such great devotees like this to this world just to demonstrate to the common people of what is the quality of a Vaishnava, what we should aspire for. Maharaj Prataparudra, he was such a king. Such wealth, not like the kings today. Today there are no kings and queens. They're useless. The Queen of England, what is her position? She just, no power, no influence. They just write about her in the newspapers. And they usually just criticize her. And all of her children and nephews and aunts, all of her whole dynasty is engaged in so much scandals and corruption. She's just totally disgusted with all of it. And anyway, she has no power. She has nothing. She's basically just some sort of a figurehead for people to get sense gratification by thinking, we have a queen. But the politicians, they're voted in power, then they're kicked out by the same people that vote them in. They're the ones that tell the queen, do this or don't do that. Who has power? But Maharaj Prataparudra was a real king. No one could tell him anything. He was in power. He was in that dynasty of monarchy. He had control. But he was always humble to the Brahmins and to the Vaishnavas. And when his spiritual master, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, said, Krishna has come as Lord Chaitanya, he said, I must surrender to him. Please arrange for me to meet with him. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, very difficult. He's a sannyasi. He's against all this material wealth and sense gratification. Lord Chaitanya said to For a person desiring to cross over this ocean of birth and death, to associate with materialistic people, too much attached to wealth and sense enjoyment, it is more deadly than drinking poison willingly. Niskinchanasya bhagava bhajanomukasya paramparam jigamasura bhavasagarasya. And in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to see the king. He said, if you even ask me again to see this king, I will leave this place. And when this news was communicated to Prataparudra Maharaj, he said, with all sincerity, he said, then I will give up my kingdom. I will give up my crown, all my silk turbans, all my jewelry. I will give up my palace, my family. I'll give up everything. I will become a beggar. I will live in the forests or on the sides of the footpaths, and I will be a beggar. Because what is the use of all this if it is separating me from Krishna? And he was determined, Dhritavrata, he made a determined vow that he would leave everything behind and become a mendicant in order to receive the favor of the Lord. And when the devotees heard of this, in their hearts they were worshiping such a great soul. And when it came time for the Ratha Yatra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates were all gathered before the beautiful, beautiful cart of Lord Jagannath. They were bringing him out with silken ropes. And Maharaj Prataparudra was present with a golden broom in his hand. And he began to sweep the street for Lord Jagannath and his devotees. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw, yes, look, he may be in position of king, but he is considering himself the servant of the servant of the Lord. He is taking a humble menial position, using his kingship simply to serve the Lord. As a street sweeper, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to give him his mercy. And later on, in a garden near the Gundicha Mandir, Ramananda Rai, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they told Prataparudra Maharaj that now don't dress like a king, dress like a sadhu, dress like a common man, and present yourself before the Lord in that way. And chant these slokas about Krishna. And in this way, Gopi Gita, you can do personal service to the Lord. And when he came before him and began to chant these pleasing slokas that the gopis prayed in separation from Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked, "Who are you?" And Prataparudra's reply was, "I am very fallen soul who am the servant of the servant of your servants." He did not say, "I am the king of Orissa. I have so many millions of soldiers and I have so many crores of rupees and I have conquered all my enemies." He did not say like this, "I am coming from the dynasty of royalty." If he would have said those things, Mahaprabhu would have left him within a moment. But he said, "I am the servant of the servant of your servants, the most fallen, lamentable servant of your servants." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him and gave him his supreme mercy. This is the path of bhakti. This is the standard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us. And we must aspire to follow in the footsteps of such great souls. Whatever our position of life, we should never think we are Purusha, we are always Prakriti. We are always the energy meant for the pleasure of the Lord. We are always the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And if we keep this consciousness, there will be no problem in our spiritual life. Krishna will protect us under any situation. But Maya is very strong, so strong, and she has so many complicated networks in which to entangle our minds with various illusions. You have seen computer networking. Some of them are very, very complex. But what is a computer? It is just one tiny, infinitesimal little speck of the power of Maya being manifested as far as how to organize networks. But what to speak of the network of material existence which Maya has created? There is so much data in this network, and every piece of it is simply meant to cast you into illusion, to complicate your mind. We come to Krishna consciousness
because we're frustrated with material existence. We want simple living, high thinking. We want a goal. We want a purpose in life to fulfill. We want to go back home, back to Godhead. Simple living, high thinking is the process. But it is not so easy. Because at every step, the network of material existence is going to try to put complications in your mind. Try to distract you from the simple process of chanting Hare Krishna and serving the devotees. At every step, something will happen. So we must hear this beautiful verse from Srimad Bhagavatam with very, very great attention. And we must have complete conviction and faith that if simply we remain the humble servants of the Lord, use our hands, use our heads, use our eyes, every part of our body for the pleasure of the Lord, then Krishna will deliver us. But if we use our ears to hear the mundane topics of the politics and the music and the cinemas of this world and the gossip, then our ears are no better than the snakes, the holes that the snakes dwell in. And if our tongue is not glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead and chanting His names, but rather talking all gossip and rumors and talking all nonsense about mundane affairs, then the tongue is compared to the tongue of a frog. Just making all crazy noises. And what does the frog's tongue accomplish? Prabhupada says that frogs are thinking they are very poetic at night. But actually, the snake is just listening. Where is that sound coming from? And he's calling the snake to eat him, devour. So we should not have frog tongues. We should not have snake hole ears. And the eyes that do not see the beautiful form of Krishna in the temple are no better than the eyes on the plumes of a peacock. They look very nice, very beautiful, but they don't see anything. They're useless. The eyes are totally useless unless they are being utilized for some spiritual progress in life. In this way, we should be very careful to keep nice association and always aspire to be Krishna's servant. And whatever opulences, whatever excellences Krishna gives us, dharamasya hyabhavargasya natatayopakalpate, we should not think that it is for me. We should understand it is for Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Today at Radharas Bihari Mandir in Juhu is His Holiness Sridhar Swami Maharaj's Vyas Puja. So whoever can come, please come. It begins at 10 o'clock. So we'll be leaving just now. Is there one question? Yes?
Maharaj, Prabhupada repeatedly tells us that we are all spiritual sparks and Krishna is compared to fire. And we are the sparks from that fire. And so we are qualitatively same as Krishna, but quantitatively Krishna is superior. So even the tendency to be an enjoyer, tendency to be a proprietor, is also a quality we acquired from Krishna only, because we are qualitatively same as Krishna. So as long as we accept Krishna as supreme enjoyer, supreme proprietor, what is unnatural about we being enjoyer or proprietor? Because we are qualitatively same as Krishna.
You must enjoy. You cannot live without seeking enjoyment. because you are part of Krishna. But you must understand what is your constitutional nature of how to enjoy. If the spark wants to enjoy the position of the fire, then it is in great illusion. In fact, it will separate itself from the fire and it will go out. The spark is the spark and the fire is the fire. Our enjoyment is by bringing light to the fire. If the spark leaves the fire, then the spark cannot really enjoy.
Correct?
But if the spark is not giving light, when the spark is in the fire, nobody even sees the spark. You just see the fire. Correct? The spark's enjoyment is simply to give, is to assist the light of the fire. In the same way, if being the part of Krishna, you want to enjoy separate from Krishna, you will suffer. And your spiritual enjoyment will simply go out. You must enjoy, but your enjoyment is to be enjoyed by Krishna. It is not to enjoy separate from Krishna. Do you understand?
My question is, Maharaj, like I'm qualitatively same as Krishna, if I think I'm enjoyer and Krishna is supreme enjoyer, if I think I'm proprietor, Krishna is supreme proprietor, if I think I'm Ishwara of my body, but Krishna
then
is...
Then you are in Maya. Then you are an illusion. Then you are fool number one. That's all. Because you are not enjoyer, and you are not proprietor of anything. You are a spark. Krishna is the proprietor of you. And Krishna is the proprietor of everything that has to do with you. And that is truth. Just because you're qualitatively one with Krishna doesn't give you any position except being completely subordinate to Krishna. Do you understand?
Yes,
your whole conception of being part of Krishna and qualitatively one of Krishna is completely rascaldom. It's nonsense. You're qualitatively one with Krishna. That means you are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. That means you are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But what is your position being eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss? That you must understand. Just because you're qualitatively one with God does not mean you have the position of God. You are eternally the servant of God. The soul is not a proprietor of anything. Srila Prabhupada said, you think you can renounce, you're an illusion to think you can renounce because you have nothing to renounce. Everything is the property of God. To think that you're renouncing anything is false ego. Prabhupada said, if you go to the Bank of America and you walk into the bank and say, I am going to renounce the money of this bank, people will look at you like you're a fool. It's not yours to renounce. That is our condition. Everything is the property of Krishna. So get this out of your brain that you're qualitatively one with Krishna means you are a proprietor and you are a controller and you are an enjoyer. Quality one with Krishna means you're only Krishna, means you enjoy what Krishna has created you to enjoy. And that is bhakti, devotional service to the Lord. That is your enjoyment. And what is your property? Your only property is the right to serve Krishna. You have no other property. If you're happy with that property, you'll enjoy forever. If you're looking for some other property, then you will suffer. Haribo. When people ask Prabhupada those questions, he would become very strong. Because this is the Mayavad conception. This is the materialistic conception. To even twist the Vaishnava philosophy, you're qualitatively one with Krishna, that means why don't you enjoy like a little god? You're part and parcel, so Krishna's the big god, I'll be a little god. That is our illusion. We're not little gods. Krishna is the only God. We are all meant for His pleasure. Do you understand? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.